Listen and earn to the Profit Express with your host, Tim Healy. For over a decade, Tim has helped the Long Island business community create sales systems through sales system development, training, and coaching. Tim is also the president and owner of Healy Success Solutions. Get ready as we create big-time profits for your business today. Now, here's your host, Tim Healy.
Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy. And I want to invite you to join me each week as we tackle the hottest stories, topics, and trends about today's entrepreneur right here on the Profit Express on 88.7 FM WRHU. So thank you for listening. And if you happen to be on Facebook, you can see upcoming guests. So make sure you visit us there. And you can also see what's coming up on the show if you're on Twitter and you want to follow us at Radio Tim Healy. Or you can go to the Facebook page, The Profit Express, of course, on Facebook. Now, I am having a special mystery guest on, okay, probably around 6:40, 6:45. Now, this guy is a real maker and shaker in the business community today. I can tell you that, folks. And he has a special announcement. You're absolutely going to want to stay tuned. Keep it here. Don't go anywhere. It's the Profit Express, 88.7 FM. This guy is so good, I'm afraid I may just lose the show. This guy may take the show from me. At least, hopefully, I can beg for just he would be a co-host so I can keep my show. That's what a rock star this guy is. So don't go anywhere. Now, if you own your own company, if you sell a product or service, you are selling, in part, a brand. Now, the question is, what does your brand represent? How is it known in the marketplace? When people hear or see your brand, what kind of a reaction are you getting? Since I'm a big believer in perception is reality, you have to consider how is your brand being perceived in the marketplace? And then the real question is, how do you go about creating a brand that people will buy into? Now, these are all critical questions that can have a big impact on your success or lack thereof, but we also know these aren't easy questions to answer. So that's why I'm really excited to introduce to you a man who's got the answers. Yes, he does have the answers. And he's a cowboy from South Dakota. And in his spare time, he happens to be a best-selling author, a global business leader, business celebrity, a speaker, and he is Jeffrey Hazlett. Now, Jeffrey is going to join us to share his insight into what America's most successful brands are doing right and where they may be missing the mark. Now, the great thing is, as you stay tuned and you're listening in on our conversation, you'll get a sense as to where your brand stands. Is it cutting the mustard? Now, again, Jeffrey brings his experience as a best-selling author of The Mirror Test and Running the Gauntlet. His third book, which is due out September 8th, Think Big, Act Bigger. Again, it's coming out soon. And he's also host of C-Suite TV and C-Suite Radio with his show All Business with Jeffrey Hazlett. So, folks, we got a heavy hitter on there for you today. You're not going to want to go anywhere. So if you're representing a brand, if you own a company, you know you've got a brand. And this guy has got some great answers. Okay, so here he is. It's a pleasure to have on board the Profit Express, Jeffrey Hazlett. Jeffrey, how are you today?
I am doing great. I'm calling you from my place in South Dakota, so it's good to be talking to you. You know, I'm going to be heading out to take care of the horses when I'm done with this, but it's looking great.
Wow. So I know you spent some time in New York. Obviously, you're all over the place, but you're actually calling from South Dakota today.
Yeah, I have a place in New York City. We have offices in New York, L.A., San Francisco, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and then I have a place in South Dakota that's home, but I do live in New York, and most of my work is in New York. As you mentioned, those television shows we do, and our radio show with CBS and Play.it. So, so I'm in New York quite a bit.
Well, great, and thanks for spending some time with us. Now, speaking of C-Suite, you know, your work on C-Suite is giving you some amazing access into America's top brands, the top CEOs.
Yep.
What makes a brand great in 2015?
Well, doing what you say. That's the most important thing, because most companies miss because they just don't deliver what they say they're going to do. And that's where most of the frustration is. You know, it's apropos that I'm sitting here in South Dakota, because let's talk about a brand. A brand is something that we always put on a cow, and it's occasionally a horse. That's where the word brand came from. You know, when you think about it, it's the identification on the side of a bovine. I mean, that is a brand.
There
you
go.
It also means, as you well know, Tim, it means a promise delivered. And that's what you have to be able to set up. And that's why, you know, when you see great companies that have done such a super job, like, you know, Apple, or let's say Lucchese, or, you know, some luxury brands like Chopard or others, they're delivering on the promise, whatever that promise is. And whether it's a product around cologne, or whether it's a watch, or it's an iPad, or a great pair of alligator boots, you know, it is about a promise delivered. You know what you're getting. And that's why people buy brands, and that's why people like to go to brands. So the key thing for most people that are listening, you know, they're running your brands, and you want great profit, you know,
sure,
that is to really focus in on what is my promise that I'm going to deliver to the customer. And if you do that, man, you're well ahead of most companies, because most companies don't do it. Second of all, if you do that and deliver more, oh, my gosh, you talk about the prices you can charge, because, you know, who doesn't want great service, great delivery, great quality?
Do you think too many companies are breaking that promise today?
All the time. First of all, I don't think they set the promise.
No.
You know, I think the biggest problem is they don't know what the promise is. They can't tell us what the promise is. And so, you know, it's like, you know, for instance, McDonald's. What's McDonald's promise? It's not healthy food. I mean, although that seems to be the debate around it, it's a burger joint.
Right.
You know, it's not healthy food. You're not going to McDonald's because you want to get healthy. You're going
exactly
to McDonald's because you want crappy food fast. So give it to me, man. And I don't care that it's not healthy for me. I know what I'm getting when I go in. It's called a Big Mac or a quarter pounder with cheese. It's not called a veggie healthy burger. But more importantly, where you get frustrated isn't the quality of the food or what it is. You get frustrated with the fact it's not fast anymore.
Right.
And therein lies the issue. You know, we move from fast food, you know, to no food. You know, when you think about the lines you stand in or the people that are standing behind the counter, that's the stuff you get frustrated with, you know.
And so the promise begins to be broken.
Yeah, because you didn't state the promise. And, you know, you either state it or restate it, or you're ambiguous about what that is. And so quit being ambiguous about it. You know, if you tell people what you're going to about to get, and I'm going to give it to you, and I give it to you greater than what I said I was going to do, you're going to be happy, and by gosh, you'll pay me more money for it.
Right. Now, one of your C-suite interviews that I loved was with Cadillac. I found this amazing. The last time Cadillac was number one in the luxury market was 1976.
Yep.
I was 6 years old. And you interviewed a number of the executives, obviously, there. One of them was Kurt Gehring, who was the marketing manager. And Kurt said, hey, you know, part of the problem at Cadillac was we weren't listening to the customer.
I almost whacked him when he said that.
you right between the eyes, I loved it. You said to him, well, how do I know you're listening now? That was classic. So then let me ask you now. Did you get this sense that Cadillac is listening now? Oh, I think we may have lost him, or maybe it's a technical difficulty.
I am. But you know, those guys in Detroit, they're tough. They come after you. So when you start talking about them, you know, they cut me off. They cut my power. They cut everything. Man,
exactly.
Those guys in Cadillac are rough.
Yeah. They're following us online, and wait, Jeffrey's going to talk about us. Let's dictionate
this. Exactly right.
Let's kill this interview. So, all right. So let me just set it up again. So you had this interview with Cadillac. The last time they were number one in the luxury market, which blew my mind, 1976. I was 6 years old. My engineer wasn't even born yet. And you were speaking to their marketing manager's guy, Kurt Gehring. And Kurt said part of Cadillac's problem was they weren't listening to the customer. And then Jeffrey Hazlett steps up to the plate with his 2x4. And he goes, well, how do I know you're listening now? And
I thought
that was great. Now, so here's a question, Jeffrey. Do you think Cadillac is listening now?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I've been able to tour the plant, you know, but I thought it was a fair question. And even more so, I went into the C-suite. That's the premise of my show. I go into the C-suite of these companies where 99% of all the employees who work for the company never get to go in. And I ask them questions. And, you know, I'd been doing a couple shows, and I drove around an Escalade. And I went, holy moly, this is not your dad's Cadillac or your grandfather's Cadillac.
Right, right.
I mean, I hit the gas, and that sucker, it roared, and it had a lot of pickup. And I went, my gosh, this is not the car I was expecting. And so I started looking, and that's why I did the show. But I wanted to go in because here they are building a luxury brand, mm-hmm. yet they were in a bankrupt company in a bankrupt city.
Yeah.
So my point was, we talked about this earlier, is we mentioned, you know, your promise delivered. Well, if you're in a bankrupt city and a bankrupt company, tell me how you can be a luxury brand. And so I really wanted to ask them that, and so they showed me a bunch of things. Now, one of the things I think was interesting, recently Cadillac moved its headquarters to where? New York City. So they decided to make sure that they really are delivering the promise by saying, hey, look, we don't want that to be a distraction. We're going to go where the people are. Where we think luxury is, it's in New York, and truly a lot of luxury products come out of there as it does California and a lot of other places for that matter. But
sure.
But when you think of richness and luxury and, you know, urban, well, that's Cadillac. And so, you know, I think they are doing it. I think that they've learned some lessons that, you know, they basically rode their audience into the ground, into
yes.
the coffin,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that's literally. And I think they're paying attention these days. You have to, or you'll go bankrupt. Right?
Now, we're talking about Cadillac listening, but let's take a step back, you know, from the 30,000-foot view. How important, Jeffrey, and today's guest, Jeffrey Hazlett, best-selling author, and he's sharing some time with us today. Jeffrey, how important is it for the average typical company to
every
listen?
Every company.
Yeah, to
every
listen to
company.
Their customers.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest, you know, people say, what skill sets do you need to have in the C-suite? And I think the biggest one is listening. Because, you know, it's not knowing what to do, it's listening to find out the things to do,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's a real important skill for C-suite leaders to have is one of just listening and to hear the real stories, to sort through all the noise that's out there. But, you know, your customers will tell you what you want, what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to listen to them, you know? And your job is just to, again, 90% of the battle was just showing up, you know? If you just get it to them, you're going to win. Now, if you get it to them with great quality, great service, and all the other niceties that go with it, that's the real profit. That's the real, you know, value added that you get to extract, and that increases the value of your brand or the value of your company. And that's really what it's about. So for every company, I don't care if your company's doing $50,000 a year, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. And by the way, I've bought and sold 250 businesses in my career, $25 billion worth of transactions. I've managed businesses that, you know, quite frankly, I needed to shut down, and I've done great businesses that I had budgets of $17 billion just for the marketing.
Right.
So, you know, but I've always found the same. There's no difference between a business on Wall Street and a business on Main Street. The only difference is the numbers of zeros behind the number. Same principle.
The numbers are bigger, exactly. Now, interesting, it was in one of your other interviews on C-Suite, was with Dunkin' Donuts. Now, truth be told, I'm a Starbucks guy, but we don't want to get into that. But,
yeah, well, I'm not going to debate it. I just do the stories.
So
you
yeah.
drink what you want to drink. You know? I actually call Starbucks $5, so there you go.
There you go. And so one of the interviews was with the folks at Dunkin' Donuts. And one thing I found interesting, when you're in the C-suite, You and one of the comments you had made, I don't know if you recall, but you're saying, man, I just get a real sense that this is a laid back environment. It's a comfortable environment. It's not as rehearsed as the other C-suites that you visit.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, so what impact, what's different about their culture then?
Well, it was, you know, typically when you're in a C-suite, and I've been in that job before at a Fortune 100 company. Now, Dunkin' isn't as big as that, but it's a, you know, $1 billion operation. So it's still got a lot of money behind it.
Mm.
What I found to be interesting, when people were making presentations, typically at a bigger company, people rehearse those presentations, and there's binders, and there's sheets of paper, and there's, you know, slides and all that. They weren't like that. It was more like, it more fit their culture of a coffee business. And so they were sitting around the table having a discussion about the major issues of the company, and they were making decisions as though they were in a coffee clutch, which fits the culture, but what I found to be interesting as a C-suite is that, and that's why I said it was much more relaxed, is that there were a new team. By the way, 11 of the 12 players had only been with the company less than 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a couple of them only, you know, most of them only a couple of years, which the fact that they came together that fast was interesting. but they talked and they had a rhythm. And when you see that, that's a highly, you know, like a, it was like a football team, a basketball team that had done a lot of practicing. And so it's really cool when you see that, and it was very relaxed, like it was second nature. And you don't always see that. You know, I've been in, like I said, in big companies or other companies, even small companies, where it's much more rehearsed, much more measured, you know, and calculating. And it just, I didn't get that vibe from them, which was really cool.
Yeah, that was certainly an interesting episode. And folks, you're listening to The Prophet Express right here on 88.7 FM WRHU. Today's guest is a cowboy from South Dakota, among other things, a global business leader, a business celebrity, best-selling author. It's Jeffrey Haislett, best-selling author of The Mirror Test and Running the Gauntlet. And he's also the host of C-Suite TV and C-Suite Radio. Now, Jeffrey, as you know, being an entrepreneur, and we got lots of entrepreneurs listening right now, being an entrepreneur is an inherently risky proposition. Is America diminishing people's willingness to take risks?
No way. I think we're going through some changes, and I think some of what we're seeing is some decline, but I don't think the spirit of entrepreneurism, nor do I think the spirit of free enterprise is dead. In fact, I think it's more revived than ever. And big business has taken us down the path of negativity, and we've done a better job at learning how to cut things than grow things. I believe entrepreneurs are going to show us how to reinvent things again, and that's reinvent the system and reinvent the way in which we're doing it.
Because there have been over the years, though, the number of people opening up new businesses has declined over the past few years.
Well, that's indeed true, but you're starting to see, I think, a resurgence of that spirit, of the fact that you can do it. And I think what we've done is we've gone through this age of baby boomers, which is my age, and now we're coming to this new age of young people who are the millennials that are going, I can go out and do that. Why? Because I can. And so I think, you know, we're getting through that, you know, that one decade there where a lot of folks weren't ready for that. And they were sitting back and waiting to a millennial age and a millennial mindset, because I like to refer to myself as a millennial because I think it's a state of mind, or just saying anything is possible. Let's go do it. And I think that's a wonderful kind of thing to have happen. So I think I'm excited about it. You know, I've got a new book coming out called Think Big, Act Bigger, The Rewards of Being Relentless, and that's coming out through Entrepreneur Press. And I could have picked all the big presses. I had, you know, all my agent brought me all the deals from all the major publishers, but we went with Entrepreneur, and not that they're any less, but because we wanted to say this, to make a statement, we're going to do this different, and we're going to do this on our terms, and we're going to do it with businesses that want to get behind it and start thinking big.
So it sounds like you're bullish, no pun intended. It sounds like you're seeing kind of a resurgence.
Well, first of all, I'm bull anyway about everything, you know, in terms of, like, you know, get the heck out of my way. I don't know what I can probably get a lot. You know, I have a podcast on CBS and play.it called All Business, and I tend to do a little swearing. I probably can't do that on your station, but on mine,
no.
I can. So,
yeah.
So I'm being nice, but yeah, I'm very aggressive. I've always been aggressive. I'm like a Mack truck when it comes to business. Let's get stuff done. But we also deliver. But yeah, without question, I'm very bullish about.
Well, that's certainly great to hear, especially on the Prophet Express and certainly for America. Now, here's an interesting part that maybe not everybody knows. You spent some time as a CMO over at Kodak until about 2010.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
Some people know, it's not that uncommon, the knowledge that really their demise kind of started in the late 70s when they ignored digital photography.
Yeah, the exact date was Christmas 1975. That's the day they went bankrupt, as far as I'm concerned.
It just took a while, but that's when it all started.
Yep.
Now, what kind of a culture, since you had obviously some great insight into the culture, what kind of a culture allows that to happen?
Well, it's a culture. You read Jim Collins, got a great book, and one of his things was the hubris of success, and they had it. You know, they forgot what business they were in. They believed they were in the film business when they were really in the business of capturing moments. You know, when you think about it, here's a Kodak moment. Everybody knows the term, and yet they locked in Kodak moment to mean film, when it meant that we were capturing any kind of individual picture, family picture, photo, any photograph or image, whatever it could have been. It could have been on, you know, paper, documents.
Right.
And they forgot that that was part of what they created, and that's what they had. Now, whether that's in a digital form or it's in a print paper form, that's what the company forgot. And then they also had, you know, in the culture, they really believed, and it became mood, and mood's a big thing. You know, you can overcome a lot with great moods. If you've ever been to a great restaurant that had, you know, great food, but terrible, you know, employees had bad moods, but you didn't want to go. I mean, if you've ever been to a, you know, restaurant that's not so good, but people were so nice, you want to go back again.
Right.
Mood, you can overcome a lot with mood, and they really believe that their best days are behind you. And if you believe your best days are behind you, it's really tough to get it up, you know, and keep moving forward in the way that you want to do it. And that's they had so much baggage, it just didn't have enough runway to be able to turn it around.
It was, the irony is, if I'm correct here, they were the ones who basically invented the digital photography, correct?
Yeah, as I said, 1975,
yeah.
A guy named Steve, I'm going to forget Steve's name right off the top of my head right now, but Steve sat in a room and he created the first digital camera, took the very first digital photo. He took a digital photo of a real photograph, okay? And then he ran around the next day with that camera. It was a blue box, and he ran around from, you know, executive to executive showing, hey, look, here's the new digital camera. Here's a new way of taking Kodak moments. And everybody said, put it away. You forget. We make film. Well, they did make film. You know, we made, manage, and move images and information. That's what Kodak did. And they just forgot that they were in the business of creating Kodak moments, whether they're, again, they could have been digital. You could have been, you know, you could have been a contender. You could have won, you know, and
they
forgot it.
That's such a painful, sad story for an American giant. And oh, gosh. And folks,
but what a great lesson that the time in which you think you're at the top of your game, that's when you need to reinvent again. So every entrepreneur that's listening to us right now, when you think you've got it perfect, break it. You know, find a different way to do it. Not to lose your focus on what you're doing, but find a better way to improve. Continuous improvement, you know, always wins. That's Darwin proved that many times over.
Well, don't you encourage tension?
Oh, absolutely. I love tension. Are you kidding me? In sports, we have this thing. Man, now you're winding me up, and I haven't even had any caffeine today. So, you know, yeah, tension. Listen. Everybody that's right now, we have a saying in sports, no pain, no gain. Then why don't we have tension in business? You should have teams competing with each other. You should have departments competing with each other. You should have sales guys not get along with finance. It's a natural occurrence. And so there's nothing wrong with that, because that creates a better product, a better way of doing things. If you have sales guys trying to sell things and the finance guy's going, you're not getting enough profit, and they have to come together to figure that stuff out, that's good for the business, not bad. And so you need to understand tension needs to be in that business, you know. That's why coaches, you know, strive for players to run faster, to catch the ball, you know, pass the ball faster or quicker or whatever. That's great for your business.
So kind of throw them in a room and make them fight it out.
Well, a little bit. You know, you don't want anyone to die.
Well, short of the bloodbath, yeah.
You know, yeah, exactly. Take the sharp objects out, but yeah, let them fight it out a little bit, you know.
Now, I know that you have no doubt suffered through countless pitches from blabbering salespeople over your days.
All the time.
Right. Now, I hear you have, and we're talking about branding. One of the most basic ways to share a brand is what they call, lots of people know, the elevator pitch. And you and I have been victims of horrible blabbering elevator pitches. You have one special called the 118 pitch. I would love for you to share it with the audience.
Well, I also started to refer to it as the Moses pitch, and I'll get to that in a minute. It's because it relates to this. And look, I just can't stand long pitches because it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Here's the thing. The average attention span of adult is 8 seconds. I know that to be true. I looked it up on the internet, okay? So we know it's true, right?
Yeah.
And then the average elevator ride in New York City is 110 seconds. So here's what you got. You got 118 seconds to pitch me. You got 8 seconds to grab my attention, to get in what we call, in the sales parlance, the lean-in factor, where you say something so interesting, the person leans in, and we've been in those situations, and you want to hear the rest of it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then 110 seconds, tell me what the value of what you're going to do for me. Don't tell me you work with this company. I could care less.
Blah, blah.
Unless that's part of the value, you know? Unless that's you know, because you mean you're big enough, that means you've got enough money to be able to deliver the things I want. Great, okay, I get that. But that's what it is. And, it, you know, and people say, well, that's not enough time. I said, look, if Moses can present his, you know, his pitch in two PowerPoint slides of five bullet points each, you can do it in 110 seconds, you know.
Talk about a great analogy to get that, to nail that point home. I love it.
Exactly. I mean, he got it down. And so I tell you what, with my staff now, I tell the team, I said, you can pitch me the idea. You get two slides, five bullet points each, no more than seven words per line. Go.
Oh, I love it.
But when you do that, you get down to the essence of what it is, and it makes the vision and mission and the objective so much clearer when you get pretty succinct about what it is. And I call those promises. You get real clear about what your promises are, and then we come to mutual conditions of satisfaction. You know, that if you do this for me, I do this for you. And that becomes a wonderful, wonderful way to operate business.
Well, you know, it's too funny. As the saying goes, you know, I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one.
You know what? I forgot about that.
It's an old one.
It's a great one to be reminded. That's one of those, you know, Terry Paulson's a good friend of mine. He has a radio show in L.A., and he's a speaker and one-time candidate for the United States Senate.
Yep.
He's a great guy. And he wrote about keepers. That's a keeper. You know, and keeper is where somebody says something or you want to write it down, you write it down, put it in a, I keep my keepers in a ring binder. Oh, now I've kind of made them all digital files. But,
right.
You know, but these little notes, these keepers that I remember and I go back to every once in a while when I'm sitting on a plane or sitting on a train or in a car, I just look through those keepers and that's a keeper.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I wish I can't take the credit, but yes, I'm glad to share it. Now,
yeah, what the heck? If we don't remember who said it, we get to take the credit.
And folks, it's the Profit Express right here on 88.7 FM WRHU. And if you're listening and you own your own business, you know what a brand is all about. You know how valuable it is to your company. If you're a sales guy, you're out there, you're selling a product or service, you also know, because you're representing that brand, how important it is to have a brand that people buy into. And my conversation today has been with Jeffrey Hazlett, a best-selling author among a whole host of other things, and of course, he's a cowboy in South Dakota. And it's about keeping the promise, which is what we've been talking about today. Jeffrey, let me ask you, in all the access you've had to companies, certainly all around the country and around the world, I'm sure, share with us an example of maybe not a sexy name that people know, but a great example of an up-and-comer that has caught your attention that you say, wow, they understand what it is to create a great brand.
I can name it right off the bat. I use it every day, DocuSign.
Wait, what was that? Say that again?
DocuSign.
DocuSign.
Okay, it's a simple product to be able to complete a transaction digitally.
Yeah.
It's flawless. It's easy. It becomes a time saver. It becomes a record keeper for me. It becomes a reminder that you haven't signed the document. And I can do it with my phone. I can do it from everything from permission slips to for people going on field trips to multi-billion-dollar mergers. It is an absolutely great product. I'm not getting paid for it. Don't do any work for them. I just think that that's a company that's really delivering. And of course, you know, they're doing a couple hundred million. Now they're worth a couple $1 billion. I suspect they'll go public this year.
Wow.
That's a keeper. You know, that's a company that's really doing a great job. And a very simple thing. And then there's tough companies like, man, you might not like Uber, but Uber delivers. You're getting what you want.
Mm-hmm,
you know, You look at another company like another. And these are apps I'm describing now, but I love Expense Cloud or what's called TriNet. I love Expense Cloud. I pay $10 a month for it. I take pictures of my expenses. It merges them with my credit card information. Boom! I got my expenses done. Unbelievable! I love stuff like that.
Wow.
Open Table. How about Open Table? Do you use that?
Oh, the reservations. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I use that, you know, five times, six times a week. And, you know, it's like I eat, of course, you know, I'm 6'3", 200 and some odd pounds, bigger than necessary. But, you know, obviously because I'm using Open Table all the time.
Jeffrey, this has been a great conversation. Thanks so much for jumping on board today.
Well, let me come back, and I can't wait to hear your. I'm going to keep listening because I want to hear your surprise guest coming in.
Wait, let you come back. Come on. I just hope you pick up the phone when I call you next. Are you kidding me? I mean, you know.
Hey, this has been fun. I like it when we have fun and we get paid. That's a bonus.
I'm telling you, you almost feel a little bit guilty, but not too much.
But, no, I never feel guilty about taking money.
No, but you deserve it. You're not taking it. You've earned it. That's the thing. That's the thing. Hey, good luck on all your endeavors, and thanks for sharing some time with us today, Jeffrey.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Cheers.
You got it. Thank you, sir.